Okay, so as we talk about wealth cycles and the seven steps, the seven steps are start with conditioning. So conditioning is at the top. Financial conditioning, where does it come from? I'm going to go down the seven steps. I'm going to come back up to the top. Financial conditioning starts when you're born, and between the ages of 0 and 8, we're conditioned by our parents, by eventually peers, by religious leaders, by educators, and a lot of just influences that happen out in society by media. So I'm going to come back and we're going to talk specifically, and I'm going to go a little different direction. I talk about the Rolt model a lot. I'm going to actually talk about the conscious subconscious mind tonight and how you can start taking control of some of the thoughts that are leading to your results. So conditioning will be with you forever, so it's really important that you have some levels of awareness about it and not ignore it. It's such an emotional part of the financial game, and what I see over and over and over is that most people think that money is about emotion more than it's about numbers, or if they think about numbers, they get confused and then go to emotion. So there's kind of this entanglement that goes on around conditioning that I'm going to give you some structures for to sort out and just to be aware of and carry with you as you go into the foundation. So step number one is all around the conditioning. 2, 3, 4, and 5 are the foundational steps. So step number 2 is about developing your financial baseline. Probably mostly overlooked, and as I know many of you who are clients and Big Table mentees on the call, it's not only emotional to do your baseline if you really have to, you know, face the fact that you have spending patterns that you're not excited about, that you may have to make some choices that you've been tolerating, not trading up, to be around people that are really like you. Your baseline requires you, for some of you for the first time, to get a P&L, a balance sheet, a forecast, revenue projections for your business. And there's several things that we're going to talk about that I believe that are really critical developing your baseline. So that gives you where you are. And then step number 3 is your financial freedom day. And as many of you know, I don't like the word retirement or budget or diet because it's all very restrictive. So I want people that we work with to have financial freedom day and have it really identified. In fact, if you go to the liveoutloud.com website, there's a table where you can start figuring out if you have financial goals, how much do you have to put away now? So I really encourage you, if you've not done this, go to the liveoutloud.com website and start putting in some of your financial goals. So it will actually amortize for you. If you want X amount of dollars in X years, how much do you need to put away now into your investing wealth account so you start getting those goals versus, you know, many times I'm in a room and people will say, well, I want to be worth $10 million. Well, what does that take? And this the charts that we put on the liveoutloud.com website help you start figuring out for the first time what does it really take to do that, okay? So that's Financial Freedom Day. It's the day that you get the want-to life versus the have-to life. It's the day that you get to know that your net worth, your cash flow, and the life that you really designed to live, want to live, you want your family to live, it gives you a space to condition your children from that place. What's that day? And to me, it's not retirement day. It could be when you're 30 years old. It could be when you're 40 years old. It could be when you're 50 years old. But it's a day that you pick. It's an age that you pick that you're done. And what I know about most successful people is that they're never done. They continue on for years and years and years. I mean, Bob Proctor is one of my mentors, heading toward his 70s. I mean, he'll be on his stage. He'll be on stages forever. He loves being on the stage. He has an incredible message to give. So that's Financial Freedom Day. Step number 4 is your lifestyle management. And what we find is that most people don't manage their lifestyle cycles at all. So managing your lifestyle, there's several steps in that. What does it take to manage your lifestyle? It's typically the thing that's got people into a pattern of never being able to create wealth. And what we want is to break those patterns. What are the steps that you need to take to break the lifestyle cycle? We're going to talk about what a lifestyle cycle is and start getting right side up. I mean, I work with clients in and out throughout the day. And we were taking literally hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt and condensing it down to at most a 7-year plan if you put your house in there. But for most people, we're getting under 5-year plans. And if you look at interest and the amount of interest, there's two people, one who pay interest and those who get paid interest. And if you're the one paying interest to other people, it's almost like me being able to say, hey, come invest with me and I'll give you a 13% return or a 15% return or 20% return. Basically, if you have credit card debt, you're doing that to somebody else in the reverse model. So until you clean up that credit card debt or that consumer debt, you'll be upside down in what we call a wealth cycle model. So step number 5 then is to actually get the foundation of your wealth cycle set. And there's several steps we're going to talk about. And in my mind, once you have step 5 handled, John Burley's equivalent of this would be a level 4 investor. It's where your foundation's cleaned up, you have your revenue handled, you're out of debt, You have money that you could invest, that you start doing some automatic investing processes with. And then the fun begins. Then you go to step 6 and 7, which is the acceleration of your wealth. It's growing your wealth beyond really anything that you could imagine. And several of you on the call, you know what I mean. The first million is always your toughest. After that, it's just recycling the game over and over and over on a foundation that's built solid. And it will come faster than you ever can imagine. So step 6 is acceleration. This also, when you get to acceleration, we really take looks at what I call the next level of structure. So during steps 5, we're looking at entity structuring. Even actually in steps 2, we're looking at entity structuring. We're looking at your baseline. Where are you now? Where are you from a tax perspective, insurance perspective? But when we get to step 6, it's a whole different game because the cash is going to come so quickly that if you don't manage the having too much money problem, you'll end up in a tax problem. We love that. I remember when I first met Kiyosaki in 1997, he told me that. He said, you know, there's two big problems in life. One is the not enough money problem, and the other is the having too much money problem. So step number 7 is what I'd say leadership is. How do you take and lead the relationship to your wealth team like you've never led them before? And I know that's a piece in the model that is unique. I, through all my learning, didn't learn that leadership and wealth really comes together. And we put leadership and wealth teams as critical components of the acceleration of wealth. So we go back up. Again, step 1 is conditioning. Steps 2 through 5 are foundations. Steps 7, 6, and 7 are acceleration. So as we look at that, I want you to roll up your sleeves and put on your tennis shoes. And a couple things about as we go through this. I want you to take notes from the perspective that this is you. I mean, that this is your life. Not taking notes like, oh, this is what Laurel says. This is taking notes. This is how it applies to me. This is what I'm learning about me. These are actions that I need to take about me. In fact, if you really wanted to be diligent, you'd put a column down the right side and all the actions that are possible homeworks that would come out of the call, you'd note there or even note them in your day timer. But take them into a place that will be actionable, not just in a whole series of a bunch of yellow, you know, pad notes. So if you don't have a pen and paper, go run and get one, and we're going to get started. So when we talk about financial conditioning, I want to do the conscious, subconscious, and creative subconscious model tonight instead of the RALT model. The RALT is results, action, language, and thinking, because your thinking drives your language drives your actions drives your results. And what we work on the most with you is your language and your action, because if you're not in action, we know you're not moving, you're not doing anything different to create different results. Action will always create new results. May not be the right results. You're going to have some learning and get focus for some new results. Knowledge is not action. So clearly we love people reading and being in that kind of action, and we want it with very tactical, be out in the field. A lot of your real estate questions in my mind have to do with getting out and being in the field, seeing how it happens. When we look at conditioning, I want you to draw 3 circles. I want you to draw them in the shape of a triangle, 1 on the top, 1 to the left, and 1 to the right. So you'll have a triangle. The top circle being what I would call your conscious mind. So your conscious mind is the place where you're conscious, you're aware of everything that's going on around you. Your senses are highly influencing what's going on. So your ability to taste, smell, touch, see, hear, all of those are being highly influenced at your conscious level. Your intellectual factors, your ability to have an imagination, to reason, to have perspective, all of those things are fully enacted. But when you go to sleep, that guy goes to sleep too. And then what happens, but what doesn't ever go to sleep, is your subconscious mind. And so down to the left corner is what I would call your subconscious mind. And your subconscious mind is exactly that. It's below the surface. It's not the things you're aware of. It's, for example, your ability to drive a car when you aren't really paying attention because you're on the, you know, phone and you're eating and you're doing a whole bunch of other assorted things. So it's when you're what some psychologists would call you're an unconscious competent. You're unconscious about what you're doing, but you're very competent at doing it. So your subconscious mind is really the what I would call the decision maker. It unfortunately doesn't have a really good ability to say yes or no. Your conscious mind can say yes or no. Your subconscious mind typically doesn't. Your subconscious mind is driven by everything that's been stored up over the course of years. And then it's reinforced by this other circle over on the right, bottom side of the triangle, which would be your creative subconscious mind. So your creative subconscious mind influences your subconscious mind. In fact, so much so that its sole job, the creative subconscious mind, sole job is to make sure your subconscious mind stays the same. Your creative subconscious loves status quo. And so you spend your lifetime getting out of status quo. That's why a lot of people will say, well, it's just comfortable to do it that way. But comfort isn't necessarily learning. I mean, think about all the sports that you've played and how many times you had to fall down, miss the basket, miss the ball, you know, fall off your bike. Whatever the sport was, there's a whole process in there called practice. That as adults, we forget that practice, and in marketing we call it testing, beta testing, becomes part of the learning, and that failure is part of the model, and uncomfort is part of the model. And so you have this brilliant subconscious, and especially the creative subconscious, whose whole job is to make sure that subconscious guy stays the same. So let's just play this out. In comes, let's just use a lottery winner because that's an easy one. In comes $10 million into your conscious mind. It's like, yay, I'm rich. I want to, you know, a $10 million lottery. What has to happen at a cellular level, not making this one up, you can go check this in the psychology books. Your conscious mind, there's variations on this, but this is my teleconference version since I can't see you and a lot of you know I'm drawing. Your conscious mind checks in with your subconscious and basically is asking it, have you seen anything like 10 million bucks before? And your subconscious mind sends a message right back to your conscious mind and says, no, we live paycheck to paycheck. We can't afford it. I don't deserve it. I wouldn't know what to do with it. I'm confused about money. You know, I act emotionally. So whatever the message is, it sends it right back up. Your creative subconscious gets alerted that there might be a disconnect here, so I better send in the reinforcements to make sure we stay the same. And then what happens out of your conscious mind is you make a decision. You make a decision to do certain actions that give you certain results. And those results typically are absolutely aligned to that subconscious level of thinking. So if what you say is I live paycheck to paycheck, it might take you a couple of years. You and your spouse have quit their job. You know, it might be 2 years down the road, but all of a sudden that $10 million, of which 42% plus goes to the government in taxes, so what you really walk home with is about just over $5 million, and you buy everybody and, you know, your family a house, you've over-leveraged, and you've spent a big paycheck. See, 2% of lottery winners ever keep their money, and I believe it's because they never, well, most, not just I believe, but most studies show that it's because their thinking never changed. So when we talk about having a millionaire mindset, we're talking about the mindset of knowing that $1 million will never come to one personal checking account. $1 million is going to come to multiple entity accounts. It's going to be highly structured with appropriate tax strategy. It's going to be probably held in a trust, and that wealth will be set up to be sustained for generations, not just for a one-time, I have $1 million cash in the bank. I mean, if you really think through that, what would you write on your tax return? What would your 1040 say, and what would the government say? Thank you, could I have my piece? So when we look at wealth, we're not talking about high income. We're talking about asset generation. This model, what I want you to think about, is just like muscles. When you focus on a strength training program or growing a muscle, you exercise, you practice, you exercise, you practice, and it gets, you know, leaner, stronger, faster, and more able to create more, right? If you really get to the technical terms, it gets more oxidative, it gets all of that, right? So your biochemical changes. So when you think about your subconscious being a muscle, what are the messages that need to be atrophied, and what are the messages that need to grow around your millionaire mindset? So right now, I just want you to take a moment on the call, and actually, I'm going to come live momentarily, and I want to just hear what are some of the muscles you want to grow, and what are some of the muscles you need to atrophy that will strengthen your millionaire mindset? Anybody? Come share.
This is Cynthia. I'll share. For me, what sabotages me is having too many ideas and getting scattered. And not having a kind of a, like a waterfall effect. Like my experience in the past has been when I can generate success in one area and go bingo, then I can move it to the next one and go bingo, 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 and then voila. But when I have too many going on at the same time, I get overwhelmed and then I don't get started.
Cynthia, I think you've tapped into one that is what I would call one of the biggest saboteurs, is because there's this illusion that your subconscious mind says, oh, but look at all these cool opportunities I have. And the truth is, not one of them has produced enough revenue to sustain itself.
Yeah.
So we talk a lot about the big table, and in our coaching, and just in general, it's a huge principle of ours, is get a cash machine, get your fastest path to cash, get a revenue model moving, so you have that to lean into, and then let that help co-create the next asset after the next asset, versus have five things on your plate and none of them move forward very fast. Okay? Others? Anybody else want to share? We're going to keep going.
I'm not sure if this is what you're looking for here, but I have all the information. I know what I need to do. The only problem I'm having lately is like getting off my butt and actually doing something.
I can second that. Yeah, I'm going through exactly the same thing. You know, I'm actually taking some seminars, both in the real estate side, in the stock market side. You know, all these different so-called gurus trying to teach you how to get rich fast. And there's just too many different things, and I'm not sure which one should I really start at first. And even more important is trying to, is, you know, making me wonder, do they really work?
Right. So here's what I know about getting rich fast, is most people who get rich fast lose rich fast. And it's not impossible. I mean, are there random acts of kindness in God? Absolutely. But what I find is there's a very methodical way to play this game. And as I really sit with people that we coach and we work through their debt plans, it took a while to get into debt and build that kind of a lifestyle. It's going to take a while to go the other direction. And doing something, you know, some of my most brilliant mentors say, you know, when you're running a business and it gets boring, you know you've done it right. Because your systems and the way that you're producing revenue work so well that you're kind of bored. And actually what I find is a lot of people sabotage their business that way because it does get methodical. And there is a methodical way to build cash. I'm not saying there's not, you know, no down deals and there's not a couple fast schemes, but most that I see that are wealthy, read The Millionaire Next Door, they've built it methodically on a system over time. And they've picked a couple narrow paths and they've done it. So for us, we love business. Well, I say there's three ways to build and we're going to accelerate and we're going to talk about them, is business, trading, and real estate. They're the very traditional ways. There are some untraditional and more aggressive ways, you know, gas and oil wells, you know, businesses that are what one of my mentors, Keith, calls block and tackle businesses, you know, pesticide businesses, laundromats, car washes, that kind of stuff. Any of those things that produce cash on a consistent basis. See, most people are wanting to build a business on something that's a hobby instead of something that's revenue producing, okay? So what I'm... And for those of you that are stuck and not, you know, feeling like you need to get off your butt, I would say you're not passionate. You haven't found your passion yet. You haven't found the thing that gets you up and gets you excited.
How do you find that?
It isn't reading a lot of books and sitting around. I mean, my experience is get out and experience a lot. Go out and work for, you know, literally go work for different people. Go sit in their offices. Go sit with different industries. Go ride around with a realtor all day. Go hang out with a lender. Go hang out with a fashion designer. I mean, you got to be out in the world having a tactical, you have to have a tactical experience to find what it is. And, you know, there's a few people who are blessed and it comes in the middle of the night and it's like, aha, that's what I should do. But just like recently I was with a group, actually last Saturday, and a woman had shared she was adamant about pushing forward in real estate and took on kind of a fun project to go help systemize her friend's office. And that's what she had been doing for 20 or 30 years in her corporate career and realized, my God, I am not only good at this, I can make an incredible business at this, and has passion. And her husband said it was the first time she's seen her smile in a long time. So it's something that you know you're good at that comes natural, because if you're not motivated to get off the couch and go do this, you won't. But reading and thinking that it's going to be delivered to you, it's kind of like, you know, the people looking for a date and they're behind the remote control every night. It's going to be a little problem. You got to be out, beat the street. So let's talk about wealth cycles. I'm going to describe the difference between wealth cycles and lifestyle cycles, and then we're going to get into some foundational issues. So just to complete on conditioning, it's really important that you spend time getting some mirrored feedback from those around you who see you, see how you sabotage, see how your conditioning around money has held you back. And just like Cynthia, you know, said, having lots of ideas and lots of things and not one that's a big producer, it looks and sounds better than the revenue shows. So it's not a wrong thing to do, and the other thing to do is pick one and go to revenue and then let that revenue help create another one. See, it's at that point in my mind when you have to have an assistant step in to help support the one you just built. And preferably we're going to have you get an assistant earlier. See, one of the models that I see a lot is people are unwilling to get support and they have the Lone Ranger syndrome. And the Lone Ranger syndrome doesn't work well. It only works to your capacity of 24/7. If you're willing to, you know, work 24 hours, 7 days a week. So really be clear about what are the muscles, like what are the areas that, so if you think everything's hard about money or you're confused or you don't know, those are the muscles you want to atrophy. Those are not the ones you want to continue to say. So really watch yourself. I don't know how many people I talk to during the day that their answer to most of the financial questions I ask are, I don't know. And of course I say, well, what if you did know and you had to make it up? And then you sit in that perspective, really forcing the clarity, which is why writing and journaling, in my mind, is absolutely important when you're doing this process of getting clear. But just notice what you're focusing on. You focus more on what's not possible or what is possible. Focus more on the problem or you focus more on the solution. Just know that that's going to continue,
And we do a lot of presencing of that and helping you start to get some clarity about it. And we move right into getting the foundation laid down. So as I said, steps 2 through 5. So let's start. First, I want to describe what a wealth cycle and lifestyle cycle. So if you drew two rectangles on top of each other, the top one will be a P&L and the bottom one's a balance sheet. Those are the two basic financial statements you have to know about. So the profit and loss statement, which is on the top, the left top column would be your income. The right top column is your expense. The bottom is your balance sheet. And so the bottom right is your assets and the bottom left is your liabilities. So as you look at those, what I want you to do is take and draw a line like money's coming into the income column, going straight out through the expense column and out the door. See, what most people do when they're starting and how they've learned is that they're going to make money, spend it on other stuff, and then what's left, if there's any left, is disposable income. The problem is that word. It creates a process for you to emotionally, your subconscious says, ooh, disposable income. I can just spend that however I want. We would want you to reframe that and call it cash flow. So when money comes in, you know exactly what your income is, where your expenses are going, and what's left is cash flow. And that's exactly how our business runs. In personal life, what we see is people have money come in. They need to get a bigger house, bigger stuff, and they put it on credit cards. So then the liability column goes up. So if you draw a line into the income column, down to the liability column, and then circle it up to the expense column, we call that the lifestyle cycle. Right there, you've begun. You have zero in the asset column, or very little, and money's coming in, and down in the liability column, see, liability is everything that you owe. So your total mortgage is there. The amount of the monthly mortgage is up on the expense line. Your total credit card is down on the liability line, and right up above it is the amount you have to pay monthly on credit cards. Your total student loans, your total boat, your total plane, whatever you the stuff you have, it directly correlates with the monthly expense column right above it. We call that your lifestyle cycle because your liability expense columns are so connected and driving each other insane, broke, that until you're willing to stop that and take a hold, get out of what we call consumer debt, bad debt, and then start building a wealth cycle. See, a wealth cycle is when money comes into the income column and you start putting money in, pay yourself first and put it into the asset column, then start learning ways to invest those assets so it produces more income. That's passive income. That is what we call a wealth cycle. We're assets to income, assets to income, assets to income. That's a wealth cycle. So our model of wealth cycle is getting the flow corrected in the baseline. So the flow means where's the money coming and going so you have some control and not relying on other people to do it. This is where, you know, because nobody cares about your money like you do. So for a lot of you, if you're going, oh, my God, this sounds like homework. I don't want to do it. This is the base of financial literacy. This is the person who says, I want to be in the Super Bowl, but I'm not willing to practice. So you want to be rich. I can promise you everybody I know that's really wealthy can read these inside and out. They can look at P&Ls and balance sheets and actually see a story of behavior. I can look at business balance sheets real specifically, and I can tell what's important to the business, what drives the revenue for the business, where the expense is on or off very quickly. You can too. It's not that hard. You just got to start practicing looking at them. So when we look at wealth cycles, the baseline stuff to do is start figuring this out for yourself. What is all the income, passive or active? What money comes in? What money goes out? That's on a monthly basis. Your P&L is a monthly statement. And then look at what's your balance sheet. What's the assets and what's the liabilities? If you have businesses, you do one for you personally, one for your business, one for another business. So you start uncollapsing your life so you can see it in different structures because you aren't your business. So first thing in baseline is get this figured out. Where are you right now? So then we can help you figure out where you want to be. So Financial Freedom Day is the day that you can declare what age, what day, what month, what year, how much cash flow, how much net worth, what are you really going to create in your lifetime? So do you want to be worth $10 million and you have, you know, $100,000 in debt right now? See, that gap, we call it a gap, you know, where you are now, where you want to be. That helps us create a plan for you. So we can back into, given where you are now and given where you want to go, how do we start marching forward very tactically and very appropriately towards that? Financial Freedom Day, and for a lot of people, if it's too elusive and you just can't do it, if you know you want to be worth $1 million, just put $1 million out there as a starting point. Because your first million is usually, for a lot of people, the toughest journey to walk. And then after that, it's just easy. Then you're just recreating the same game. So if you don't know, put $1 million out there. Invested at 10%, it's $100,000. That's $8,333 a month in passive income, if invested appropriately. So let's just say that you get that much, or those are your initial goals. So then we're going to back in and say, so where are you now? What do we need to do to march forward to a new plan? So baseline and Financial Freedom Day
help lay down and like have us start seeing where you are. And then we want to head into what I call step number four, which is your lifestyle cycle. So it's looking at all the expense and all the liability and what you want to do to break that cycle. And so for a lot of you, if number one is get a debt elimination plan. Then as you get a debt elimination plan, for those of you, I've done it for a lot of you, you can email me directly and just email, here's what I need. So get a pen and paper and write this down. I need the total amount of debt broken down by different, let's say a credit card or a car loan or a student loan. So each debt separately written down by its total amount. And then I also need what's the minimum monthly payment that you make on that total. So I need totals and I need minimum monthly payments and then give me your interest rate that you pay. So then you very simply create a plan to power that and accelerate that debt down. As you do that, I want you to start a new habit called pay yourself first. It's a very easy rule. Everybody I know that's rich has this rule. And even if it's only $50 a month or $100 a month, or for some people it's $1,000 a month, when money comes in and it goes into your business account, you get paid. This is up and above salary. This is you, the owner, get some money, put it in your asset column, and start investing it into other assets. And we'll get to that because that's the acceleration part. What I want you right now to do in the lifestyle, the step four part, is just get the habit. Because once you're out of debt, like I work with people who are putting at least, oh, an average of $1,500 toward the debt program. And say that debt program takes 3 years to do. After they're done, guess where we're going to have them put that $1,500 they've been spending every month for 3 years into their debt? We're going to have it put into their asset column. So within 1 year, by year four, you're now up $18,000. Now, it may not even be invested yet because you may not know, but just look what you've done for your ability to transpose your entire financial life from a consumer debt-heavy lifestyle cycle to cash in your asset column. Huge transformation. So lifestyle management, number one is have a debt plan, number two, pay yourself first, and number three is open a wealth account, because where we want you to pay yourself is into what we call a wealth account, and that could be a brokerage account. Typically, it's brokerage accounts. You know, it could be a savings account, but we prefer at least, you know, you've got it in cash. Put it in a place where we can work with you to access it to start doing some investing. Then you have the habit going, cash is coming in, and now we want to start building the wealth cycle foundation. Okay, so on the Wealth Cycle Foundation, you're doing a couple more things with this P&L and balance sheet. You're actually forecasting. You're really getting clear about where is the cash coming, the fastest path to cash I always talk about. So if you're running a business, you're gonna do what we call revenue modeling. You're going to actually project through the whole year how much cash you're going to make. So it's not a surprise. You're also in that forecast going to start planning for any capital expenditures. If you know you're going to have to grow your staff, if you know you're going to have to add some equipment, if you know you're going to have to buy a new vehicle, if you know you're going to move to a new office, those things get planned in versus come up as surprises. So the foundation is forecasting. It's making sure your baseline is set. It's starting to make decisions whether you're going to be a passive or an active investor. So the difference in our mind is even if you're passive, which means I'm a doctor and I'm so busy, I don't have time, or I'm a full-time employee, but I want to start creating a way that I could have passive income, you would be, say, a money partner. And one option, there's lots of models, but the one model is that you'd be the money partner, and you put money with somebody else, and you'd be heavily involved. So even though you're passive, you see, the biggest mistake passive investors make is they just give their money and pray. We say give your money and lead. Lead the relationship. I want to meet with you every week. I want to know where this is going. I want to know how my money's being invested. I want to know what the game is, et cetera, et cetera. So you're leading, i.e. then learning in the relationship of being passive. So maybe within a year, you actually are creating, you have an asset column that's producing some passive income. Hopefully within a year to 2 years, given your plan, it's enough that you can actually be what Robert would call out of the rat race, where you have enough passive income over your expenses that you can quit your job. You can quit the straddling of having a job. And now your job has funded your new life. And now we have whatever you are, say you're a real estate investor, or say it's funded a new business, and now you have a new business, that business continues to generate more assets. We want you having multiple entities and multiple streams of income in its truest sense, not in ideal land sense. I call Fantasy Island. We have lots of Lone Rangers that are in Fantasy Island. And I don't say that condescendingly. I'm saying that here we do this all day long and work with clients all day long in this. And we do this from a standpoint of knowing that a lot of great ideas are hobbies, and hobbies don't produce wealth. Very few, unless you make them into a real business and run them as a business.
And then in the foundation, we also are doing a lot of strategy planning, which is increasing your knowledge and your confidence around what are you going to do with that money. We're also looking at, you know, if you do have a business started, if you're a sole proprietor, is it an appropriate time for you to now become a corporation? If you have real estate that you've been holding and that's not inside an LLC, we'll want you to get that inside an LLC. Foundationally, we look at insurance, we look at your trust, we look at your tax, we look at all of that stuff. Again, on liveoutloud.com, there's a list of documents that are really important that you should be organizing and keeping, you know, controls on. So really be clear that you have a solid foundation. And in our estimation, it's at least at minimum an annual review of continuing to look and review what you need to do to keep a strong foundation. So that's steps 2 through 5, building a strong foundation. I'm going to come live and ask you some, see if there's any questions about getting your foundation organized.
Okay.
Absolutely critical. Fun? Not necessarily.
So you recommend the assistant right off the bat, and then the baseline and the P&L and balance sheet, right? First
mm-hmm.
thing?
Well, and for a lot of people, if you can't afford the assistant, then forecast when you can, which means you got to look at your revenue and say, when am I going to put that into place? And if you can, I mean, I always use the 10-hour week. Even if you have somebody for 10 hours a week that you could pay $10 or $15, you're paying $400 to $600 a month for you to have 40 hours of your life back. To me, it's, I don't know how you operate with that one. When you really get moving, and part of that is a value issue, if you go back to conditioning, is you valuing what your time's worth. I mean, for all of you that are on this call, there's a reason you're here, and I would say that you're becoming a generator for the first time, or you are a generator, and know how to produce income, and you're learning to create wealth. I would, that's a, there's a huge distinction in what I said. You're learning to become a generator, or you are a generator of income. Income produces wealth if used appropriately. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Huge distinction. You know, I love the cash flow game. I taught it for 5 years. But in my mind, there's 4 steps that got overlooked, because passive income over expenses is the end game. First game is, let's get your income over expenses. Most people can't get that done right. I mean, we missed 4 steps in the process. Passive income is the end game. And my God, is it a very different strategy than just getting income over expenses. First, you got to become a generator to do that. See, when you're working for somebody else for years and years and years, you've been conditioned that you just get a paycheck. That conditioning has to completely be reversed, that you're an income producer for yourself over expenses. Then income to assets, pay yourself first, start that habit. Then assets get invested to produce passive income. See all those fun little steps get in there? Not impossible. But it's really important that you start distinguishing the difference. So when people come to you with ideas or deal, Cynthia, I'm just picking on you because you're
the one
who said
it. Yeah, I know. That's fine.
Right? So as people come to you with ideas and deals and they say, well, it's about passive income, and you're still in the I don't have income over expenses handled, I mean, that's your game right now.
Yeah.
See, one of the things that goes on, because I believe, because we're in this memorized regurgitation society, is that we're looking for a template. Most people look for a template. Give me one thing, if I do it right, I'll get an A. And I can promise you, there isn't one. That, to me, is the fun part of this. That's why I love this business so much, is everybody gets to create their own canvas. But it requires you to get some level of tactical education. So let's talk about acceleration. We have just under 10 minutes left, so I want to get to acceleration and leadership. Helpful so far?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very helpful.
Yeah,
okay.
Very much so.
So now's the fun part. So you're right side up, your foundation's built. And even, like, you know, I was coaching some clients today. They said, well, I have, you know, between the two of the husband and wife, they had, like, 2 or 3 different ideas. Should it all be one corporation? Should it be 2 corporations? I would say in the beginning, if you're generating and you're at least getting your income over your expenses, you have a part-time assistant. I mean, things are moving, but it's not, like, as fast as you want. I would keep it in one corporation until it spins out enough cash that it informs you to do the next step. See, what will happen when you get to step 6 in the acceleration step is it will get informed by your results. So write that down. Your next step gets informed by your results. See, most people want to know for sure, is this a guarantee? Well, I can't tell you if it's a guarantee. Your results will guarantee what your outcome is. And so the next step, like the next entity, the next move, I mean, if somebody would have told me a year ago I'd be developing product, I would have told them they have lost their mind. I mean, I had no intention 1 year ago of designing any of my own work. But step after step after step and moves after moves after moves, I mean, by last summer, it was very clear I was going to go do that. And as you, a lot of you have seen the acceleration of our business go in all sorts of directions, in addition to starting a real estate company. But I didn't start the real estate company without a foundational company that funded it. So Get Real got funded and born out of what Live Out Loud was doing. And then it produced another asset. And then Get Real, as a lot of you know, in the real estate company, will produce 1,200 other assets of properties. And so the game will continue to show itself as you continue to play. So it's kind of like
the Super Bowl or the World Series. You won't know what the next inning is going to get, what's going to come in the next inning until you play the inning before. So what that does is it tells all of you, be in action. See, we can course correct. It's kind of like flying a plane. We can course correct that plane as long as it's in action to get it, you know, from Hawaii to the Bay Area. But if it doesn't land, you know, if it doesn't even take off, we can't help it. So a lot of you, you know, that said, I need a kick in the butt to get moving. Finding what's really exciting for you that gets you up. And I know clients who don't find the excitement, and they just get themselves up out of like, ugh. And then out of the action, you'll get informed. So I don't know the process for you. I think everybody has their kind of life lessons about how this journey gets walked. But being in action is the fastest way, in my experience, working with thousands of people to find it. So the acceleration part is making sure that the foundation on a regular basis, like I do quarterly reviews with my team, really looking, where's the foundation? Where's our tax going to end up at the end of the year? How do we keep enough things moving that we don't end up at the year end with a panic, you know, saying, oh my God, I have too much net. I'm going to have to pay, you know, I'm going to have to pay this or that in taxes. It's making sure that your trusts get appropriately funded. It's looking, if you have children, how are you going to start estate planning? Yes, even if you're in your 30s or your 20s, because you're generating that much wealth. One of the challenges you'll find in the acceleration is that our society economically and the models are really built on an industrial age model, not an information age model. So industrial age model was set up that everybody's going to go to work for somebody and have a pension and retire with Social Security at 59 and a half. The problem is, and so what that did is it structured a whole bunch of financial instruments. Most of the profit sharing plans, 401ks, the annuities, leverage split dollars, factoring. I mean, there are so many things that are set up for that end game, not for a I'm going to be rich in my 30s game. The other thing it doesn't set up is if you are in your 50s or 60s, which we love working with you guys, that there's really a different cash game because Social Security ain't going to cut it unless you plan on being a lot poorer. So in the acceleration game, we really get that vision cleared. See, in the acceleration game, it's kind of like I was talking to somebody, and they might be on the call tonight, that, I mean, we have, for example, we have Get Real so mapped and so forecasted that we know the revenues we're going to want to be in with by the end of this year, by the end of the next year, by the end of the next year. So when an opportunity comes along, Cynthia, Idea Land, I'm sorry, I'm teasing you. I always have to pick on somebody on my calls. But when idea or opportunity comes along and you have to weigh it against, this is where I would love all of you to be, is that you have such a clear plan for wealth generation that when something comes along and marches in your door, which lots will, a lot will when you get to that level, you have to weigh it against what's currently working. And unless it can produce more faster with, you know, less risk, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you don't do it. See, a big mistake I see a lot of people make is that they entertain every opportunity, which I think is a huge distraction against away from core revenue. I mean, you don't see, you know, Dell producing 5 Dell computer companies. He may be buying others to grow one bigger machine, but you don't see that. Now, he has a bunch of, you know, private other assets happening, but he's built a massive machine, and he keeps his attention and his focus and energy on it. Because it's your generation energy that created this machine. So acceleration is fun. It's really getting to the next level of what do I do with my assets that I keep diversifying and allocating so they're producing more and more passive income. And that could be real estate. So, you know, some of you said, well, where do I start in real estate? Depends on where you want. I would say start with cash. So if you look at all the real estate strategies, you can look at buy and hold. That's a good appreciation move. It's a good net worth move. It's a good tax move. Could be, depending on where you're at, a cash flow move. The biggest cash moves we see over and over and over are buy and flip, you know, buy and sell, fix up and flip so you get cash, or the lease option wrap game that, you know, Burley endorses that we do, which is you get cash flow every month. And some rentals, depending on how they're structured when the deal is done, like one of my clients said earlier today, she looks a year and a half and she's a big player. She looks a year and a half sometimes for a good, good property and putting in hundreds of offers to find the one good one that will for sure cash flow. So I would look, especially if you're replacing income, for a cash move in real estate first, then let that buy the bigger buy and hold will stretch out your net worth. What you'll find about real estate and business and trading and most, you know, this whole wealth, it's kind of like a baby. It gets wider than narrower, then wider than narrower. And so you pace that. To me, narrow is cash flow and wide is net worth. And so as you pace that growth, you'll be making different moves, different years, depending on where you're at. So much fun. Like, what else would you guys be doing? Finding a seller, finding sellers and finding buyers. I would say in most real estate models, having a finding property model, including finding people, which would be go out and find a ton of realtors and find a ton of lenders and get associated with them. Like recently,
one of my partners up in Oregon, went to all the realtors in his town and all the lenders and gave them a flyer and said, I want to buy properties. Help me buy properties. I will bring the deal back to you. I want people that want out of their homes. And then did the same thing on the other side. I need buyers. I need people who want to buy these homes once I acquire them. And so getting a buyer and seller system simultaneously, especially if you're playing the wrap or lease option game, is important. Leadership, absolutely imperative. You have to lead your wealth team. No one cares about this more than you do. No one's given it the juice, the time, the love, the nurturing that you have. So identifying who's to be on your team inside your business or inside your real estate or inside your trading or inside your wealth game. And then on top of it, the on is more strategic. It's the tax strategist. It's the CPAs, the attorneys. See, one of the things about leadership, and this is like a $1 million tip, so all of us write this down, is when your strategy meets with tax and meets with law, many times they don't get along. So your job is to lead that relationship, because what I see a huge mistake is somebody will come to me and they'll have a brilliant strategy and they'll say, well, my attorney said I can't do it. Or they'll say, my CPA said I can't do it. I said, did you get them all on a phone call together and say, this is what I want to do, and it's your job to figure out how to do it. Get creative, guys, girls, come on. So your job is to move forward and not have what you want, as long as it's ethical and legal, be affected at the performance of others. See, a lot of people are lazy. You all know that. You've seen it. You experience it all day long. It's why I think what the community we're building is unique. Trade up. Find cool communities to be in. So questions as we wrap the hour? That was a whole bunch of stuff.
Laurel?
Yes.
I was laid off last year and ended up starting a network marketing business and have seen moderate results from that. But due to my layoff, I banked the money and have been, you know, using my credit cards to fund my business. So that I would have, you know, the money to pay my expenses while I was building the business. Any advice? I mean,
I would encourage you to do a strategy session, because that's a bigger issue. The overarching with any, especially, I mean, what I see with a lot of network companies is that they fall in love with the product, which I think is critical. But your biggest job is to become a massive marketer. Marketing and sales is the business you've signed up for, whatever it is. So become a massive marketer and moving that forward.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, all of you, go build wealth cycles. I'm going home to my child.